outside of the virtual hardwood, it's the NLSC Podcast, episode number 429. I am Andrew, good friend of Stacey King. I'm joined as always by Derek, he of the beautiful shooting form.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. And apparently, I'm also a friend of the professor now, Grayson Boucher, the and one legend. We can get into that in a minute. But it's been a strange week, Andrew.
A strange week, you say?
Yes, yes. I mean, I was insulted, called a moron by Steve Kerr. And also, he said a bunch of other nasty stuff about me during a game of NBA Live 06. Oddly, a game that I won, actually. And, you know, I'm playing NBA 2K22 and on, you know, next gen. And Grant Hill says, "That's lit." Like he's a teenager, and just completely bummed me out and totally spoiled the moment after a good Jordan dunk, etc. It's been a strange week. Insulted by Steve Kerr, called a moron of all things, and then Grant Hill talking like a kid.
Yeah, that is very much a how do you do fellow kids moment from Grant Hill there on the commentary, which is obviously what he's been directed to do, one assumes. But yeah, that commentary in 06 could get pretty brutal, actually, when you were making mistakes. And Steve Kerr talking about the coach falling asleep on the sideline if you didn't call a timeout when he felt you should. But again, calling you a moron, that's particularly harsh.
Yeah, I shared that clip on Twitter. The reason why he called me a moron is because it was in the first half, and I picked up my fourth foul, one of my best players. And he's like, "Why is this coach leaving him in? He should have taken him out earlier. This coach is a moron." When he says this coach is a moron, who's the one controlling that stuff? That's me. So it's definitely an insult to me. And, you know, other parts of the game, he was saying things like, "What was he thinking?" And, you know, "They're not thinking," and all of that stuff. So, yeah, thanks a lot, Steve Kerr. I will say, though, I really like his commentary. And I really liked it in the early 2010 2Ks as well, before he ended up, you know, going to coach the Warriors, so he wasn't able to do it anymore. But yeah, the Grant Hill thing, we've talked about it before, Brian Anderson and Grant Hill, that second commentating team on the new 2K, just doesn't do it for me. It just feels very dumbed down, "Hey, kids," approach. And it seems very, and I said this, and I like Grant Hill, you do too. Like, I don't mind Grant Hill. I don't really particularly mind Brian Anderson, them in real life, but it just seems very phony. It seems very try hard. The moments don't seem real where they get excited at all. And that's what they're shooting for, is they're shooting for, you know, it's a simulation basketball game, realistic commentary. And I think they missed the mark by quite a bit with those two, just for, in my opinion.
I think they really stand out as the B team in NBA 2K, where they're supposed to be. I mean, it's hard to match Kevin Harlan and the commentators in that main rotation, the A team, but it is a very clearly a secondary team. Like you say, they doesn't have that animation there, the animation in their voice, the excitement. I mean, you had that with Steve Kerr, even if he was calling you a moron and whatnot, he was very animated at the time. Although I will say, something that I don't miss about older games is when they used to break the fourth wall and talk about, "Oh, you hit the wrong button, dummy," and things like that. I mean, it's kind of entertaining, but it was always, it kind of took me out of it as well. And but I'm a very stickler for sim, as you know, and sometimes, like I've talked about the courtside comedy cutscenes before in Live 2003, sometimes it just gets a bit too much. It's not necessarily the tone I like. I appreciate the bit of an Easter egg there, but yeah, I prefer it when they kind of keep it serious or just try and gloss over the mistake that you made. But yes, a very animated commentary back in the day, and I enjoy Kerr too. I also enjoy in 2K15 how he's coaching and also commentating at the same time. That takes some talent. That does.
It really does. I also want to point out that I've heard that many times too in the games where they're like, "Oh, he must have pushed the wrong button," or "Oh, he looked like a video game out there," or something like that. Like, I agree with you. Whenever that happens, I kind of cringe. I'm like, I know what you guys are trying to do. You think it's funny and all of that stuff, but you are shooting for sim. So it's a little bit awkward when you do that. But no, I think that I actually like the commentary quite a bit more in some of the older games. I absolutely love playing NBA Live 2004 right now and having Fratello on there. My brother and I are 15 games into a season on that, and you know, hearing Fratello and Marv on there. You know what's crazy for to me is how they programmed them to keep up with the action with their commentary, because the action is very fast at NBA Live 2004, and different on-court happenings are happening at such a like fast rate. Sometimes it's quick steals and then another quick steal, or it's, you know, a miss and then a quick rebound and then a putback and all of this stuff. And they just keep up with the action so well. They're programmed so well that they hardly ever falter. Like, there's not like sentences skipped. Very rarely there's sentences skipped. They're sharp. And I think that's really cool on NBA Live 2004.
It is impressive that they did that in an older game. I mean, they have made some improvements to commentary over the years. They've added some more contextually appropriate commentary and whatnot in recent games. Obviously, they've expanded in 2K the amount of commentators and have that rotating booth. But
yeah, but we know volume isn't always better, and Doris Burke is not a quality improvement, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely, so. Absolutely. And I think part of the problem in some of the newer games is you have these great anecdotes that are being told, but you hear them constantly. The first time you hear them, you think, oh, that's some great detail. But sometimes that more detailed commentary with those anecdotes and those deep stories and that analysis that you hear every single game, especially if you're like us and are playing the games on 12-minute quarters, and we like to play every game of a season when we're in a mode with a season, be it a career mode or a franchise game, you hear that over and over again. And they were doing that in the mid-2000s. They were starting to get that way. You do hear some of those lines over and over again. There's only so many lines that you can record for a game, obviously. But I think they do have more of those repetitive, really long anecdotes that you hear just over and over again now. And I think some of the simpler commentary allowed for it to keep up with the action, as you said.
100%. What's sad is it's kind of realistic in a way what they did with NBA 2K and the commentary, how there's action going on the floor and they have the commentators just telling stories over and over and over again. They're asking questions to each other. It's not related to the action that's on the court. It's related like historical conversations. When you played, how did you do this? How did you play? What do you think of the athletes today and all of that stuff? And a lot of times it's just like real life. They're just going off on tangents and they're not talking about the on-court happenings. And I think that's a problem with commentary in real life. And I think that it spills over into the video game where they don't seem to be truly interested in what's actually happening on the court. They're not truly engaged in that. And they're not trying to educate the audience on what's happening, you know, the on-court happenings. They're just going off on tangents. So it is realistic what they're doing with NBA 2K22 commentary, but it still kind of stinks just like it does in real life.
No, it's definitely, unfortunately, the case with that. I've certainly noticed it and share those your frustration 100%. I was playing my career, I think it was 2K19, around about 2K19, that it happened. My old TV gave up the ghost, and in between that and buying my new TV, I was just using a monitor, an old PC monitor with my PS4, and hooked up some old PC speakers. And the speakers were also on the way out, and one of the channels just wasn't there was no volume in one of the channels. And so even though I didn't disable commentary, it was playing all the game sounds, all the sound effects and whatnot, and the music, but the commentary wasn't coming through. It was very muted, and it was kind of like playing on the court. And I thought maybe I should mute the commentary more often when I play my career. It would be more authentic experience to not hear it. And of course, if I send you the highlights from 2K14, I have to put in my own commentary anyway, as I did with Derek Rose highlight. I mentioned Stacey King. I'd love to have Stacey King in the game, actually. I love his energy. Obviously, I'm a Bulls fan, so I love the fact that he's the Bulls announcer. But he retweeted that video that I tagged him in, so we're obviously best friends now. But I was chuffed at that, Derek. That made me feel pretty good to get his attention and for him to enjoy that and have to be gracious enough to retweet that and enjoy what I did.
Chicago Bulls legend Stacey King. Boy, is he good on the mic, though, right?
Oh, like he's so hot sauce
on the mic. That's genuine excitement, right? Would you love to put him in there instead of like Grant Hill and whatnot? He is excellent on the mic. I'd also like to take partial credit for that because I totally got you in to putting the audio over the highlight. I think it's amazing when NBA players, you know, or former NBA players, they retweet, quote tweet, share on Instagram or like on Instagram basketball video game stuff, especially from the classics. NBA 2K14 is a classic now. It came out over, you know, almost 9 years ago now. So pretty awesome that he did that. You chose obviously awesome commentary for that highlight, and he appreciated it. And reminds me of my new best friend, the professor.
Indeed.
Grace Boucher. He tweeted out a comment stating that it's never been easier for the offensive player to create space in real life because of the leniency on traveling and carry rules, right? And, you know, your leniency on, you know, you basically can carry in the NBA. You can take more than you have the gather step ability now that they threw in there. So you can take like an extra step. You're allowed to basically almost jump backwards from a standstill or take a couple steps backwards from a standstill and shoot a three, and they'll never call you for a travel for it. That's the Doncic and the Hardens, et cetera. Or sidestep after you've already picked up your dribble, et cetera. So he made that comment that it's never been easier. So he wanted fans to keep that in mind. I quote tweeted him and agreed with him and added a little bit more context as well. He liked that tweet. I mentioned a couple tweets down in that comment section that I believed also that the league overall, because of the one-dimensional style, because of the robotic nature of the way they're playing basketball now, that the league is watered down. And he disagreed with me, but we had a really decent, unheard of on NBA Twitter, with a blue check mark and a non-blue check mark, conversation about, you know, why I felt the way I felt, and, you know, why he felt the way he felt about AAU and, you know, players coming up, etc. And I thought that was really cool. He didn't delete any of the tweets. He wasn't nasty with me, and we ended the conversation on a good note.
No, I love to see that, because there's so many times in online discourse, whether it's real basketball, basketball video games, any topic, other sports, whatever, other video games, where it does get very nasty, needlessly personal. It just comes down to ad hominems. It comes down to cliched arguments, blue checks, trying to send their followers after somebody with a lower number of followers, so it becomes, you know, winning by default because it becomes ganging up on them, on the person who isn't a blue check mark, and bullying, basically, rather than actually engaging in good faith. So that was really cool to see. I'd love to see more of that, because there are so many blue check marks. It's happened to me, it's happened to you before, that have just done the quote tweet with a snarky remark, and, you know, it's always check out this person, go attack, and I think that's such a waste of what we have, the technology that we have to connect with people all over the world. You know, you and I doing this podcast every week on opposite sides of the world because of the technology that we have at our disposal. And of course, social media allows us to interact with each other as fans from all over the world and have these discussions. And look, nasty discussions are nothing new. Then social media did not bring this about. Message boards back in the day, forums certainly had that. But I think the nature of Twitter, that smaller microblogging form and those shorter discussions, the character limit that makes, that kind of pushes you towards that short, quippy argument that's trying to get the gotcha rather than actually have that exchange of ideas and a proper conversation. It's nice when you can actually have a discussion like that. So that was very cool of him. You know, hats off to him for that.
Yeah, the bullying part is a big part of Twitter discourse.
Mm.
The fact that somebody who has a very high follower account, whether they're right or wrong, can have an absolute posse unload on you if that person with the blue check mark decides to either come at you or even disagree with you in a stern way or something like that. And all of a sudden you're backed into a corner, even though you're not wrong. Right. And you're getting insults lobbed at you. And at times it does take having thick skin to like look past that and be like, these people don't know me.
Yeah.
These people are still wrong. And they're sitting behind a keyboard lashing out and saying these unbelievable things to me. And that's something that I need to just brush off because it actually has no meaningful impact on my life whatsoever. So I think that being able to disconnect and realize that a lot of times what's going on there doesn't personally actually affect you, I think that's very healthy
Oh,
in
indeed.
order to.
Indeed. It does get taken to extremes where people get doxxed after those situations. And that's when it really crosses the line from just being a bit of a nasty, unpleasant conversation to something that's against the law, quite frankly, what they do and the swatting and whatnot in gaming communities. Just ridiculous. Absolutely stupid things like that. So, I mean, that's the extreme end. But if nothing else, it is a shame when we can't converse and have a difference of opinion without having some respect for each other in the process. So that was good to see. But you mentioned Live06, which you've been playing a lot since we got it set up on your PC. We connected again. Used my was it the 2011 roster that we used?
We used, yep, it was the 10-11 season, yep.
10-11 season. Yeah, unfortunately, it still has the older seasons there, but it's got the most up-to-date team art. This is another one of those things that makes me want to go back and enhance those old mods with more detail like that. But what a fun game! Unfortunately, they just came out and really kind of cheated us in the first quarter. But we distinguished ourselves the rest of the way. We came very close to winning that game, if not for a couple of BS runs, which does happen in 06. I love 06 PC, but it does have some very harsh comeback logic and whatnot. But you had a great move with Derrick Rose with an animation we don't see very often in if at all in the more recent games.
Yeah, I want to say with that game of NBA Live 06. So Andrew and I played on one of the higher difficulty levels, and there's a couple things with that. One, the computer will literally make guarded shots the majority of the time, threes, like where your hands are up and all over and in front of the offensive player. In this case, it was Billups, and he had over 30 points in 6 minute quarters against us while he was cloaked on every defense on pretty much every three he took. We talked about it at the end of the game, just smoking threes all over the floor. So that's hard to combat. But there was a 4 minute stretch in the first quarter, and even you said you don't think you had ever seen anything like this before, where we missed every shot but two. I think we had 4 points at that point, and almost every field goal attempt was right at the rim, either a dunk or a layup or a completely wide open mid-range shot or three. And we were just bricking over and over and over and missing dunks and missing alley-oops. And it was like, what is happening?
Or getting blocked. Or getting blocked by Ronny Turiaf.
Or getting owned by Ronny Turiaf. And that's one of the more frustrating things that can happen in a game like that, where you feel like you're doing everything right, because I thought we were playing well. You're doing everything right, and you find yourself down like 17-4. And that's the situation we were in. We won the game the rest of the way, even with them shooting a ridiculously high percentage from the field, guarded heavily from the outside. I think we ended up losing by 9. I want to say, or 7. I can't remember. We had it close at the end, but I actually thought we played really good ball there, especially in the last three quarters where we were finding cutters. We were both running and doing give and goes on the fast break and doing alley-oops. We were going to the post. We were doing backdoor cuts. We were taking smart shots. I thought both of us had good isolations with Derrick Rose, but I do want to touch on that Derrick Rose move in a second, me splitting the double team and whatnot, the two defenders. But I wanted to get your take on how we played, because I thought overall, for the first time ever playing with regular teams co-op on that game, I thought that we did pretty damn well.
No, I agree. I think that's very typical of our sessions. Not the loss. We tend to win far more often than we lose to the CPU when we're playing co-op. But even if we have that rough start, maybe if we take a while to adjust to a game if we haven't played it for a while, or we're trying to adjust to a game's BS, if you will, which was kind of the case with the point guard domination in Live 06 with Billups, we always pick it up by the end of the first quarter, and and towards the through the second quarter at the very latest, we pick it up and really start getting that chemistry together and playing well, and we did, and we brought it pretty close. It was just, again, another one of those BS runs at 06. We'll pull out from time to time that pulled away. Again, if not for that slow start, we would have won that game. But it was still fun because we were competing and we didn't give up. There are some times I think we played when it's just been too ridiculous where you and I both said, okay, let's start again. This one has just gotten out of hand too quickly. And, you know, we weren't playing well. We were messing around a bit. Okay, let's play serious. And we start again and play much better. But we stuck with that one and played it through to the end. And I like our competitive spirit. That's, I think, the thing we have with those co-op sessions now is that we do compete in those situations. And we will compete to the end and still have fun. I mean, no one likes to lose, but we still had some great highlights and fun moments. And we competed.
We fought, right. I think that every game we go into, even if we get down big at the start, we fight. And I think that the other thing, too, is we both have a pride thing. I've always had it where we do definitely feel like we have to play on the higher difficulty levels,
yep.
Which in some of the older games especially, you run into this ridiculously overpowering CPU that shoots an ungodly percentage from the field. And it doesn't matter a lot of times if you're playing the proper defense inside or out on the perimeter. It just feels like they're going to make every shot. So I thought we played well. That was fun. Now, as far as like the Derrick Rose animation, I posted it on Twitter. So please check that out. I posted it on D4-3G and then the NLSC channel retweeted it. So you could also look on that channel for that. But basically I call it isolation. I cross over my defender. I get by him, and then there's two defenders waiting for me. And instead of hitting a brick wall or being sucked into them, I actually go in between them. There's an animation where you can, you know, split two defenders. I go in between them, so I get by them, and then I go in and I throw it down. And my brother and I played a full season, 12-minute quarters, 82 games, and then another 16 games in the playoffs, so 98 games, of NBA 2K22 on Series X. And that didn't happen once. There was no animation for splitting a double team. If we split it, it was pure luck, really, to be completely honest with you, when we did that in 2K22. I think that was an amazing touch on NBA Live 06 on a game that old or of any age to add that animation in where, you know, you're blitzed by two defenders. And if you do it right, you have the ability to push the ball between them like in real life and break it. And obviously you're only going to be able to do that probably with the better ball handlers in the video game, guys like Derrick Rose. But, you know, I know he's modded in, but his ratings and all of his signature stuff that's added, all of that, that's going to be Derrick Rose. So he's going to be an elite guard. But what a great touch from NBA Live 06.
And it is a canned animation to some extent. It's a two-man animation, or I guess a three-man animation in this case. But it feels organic. And that's something I would love to see in 2K23. Something that they bring back is that feeling of, yes, there are going to be moments that are canned, predetermined. That's how they have to be motion captured and whatever. But there's enough smoke and mirrors, which, as I've talked about the smoke and mirrors before, that were there in the older games, that even when something was predetermined, it has to be, this has to be the way they've designed the game for it to work properly, because it doesn't have true live ball physics in Live 06 and those older games, but yet they still have those moments that feel organic, even though they are canned to some extent. And we saw that up until 2K17, really. Those smoke and mirrors, they were able to hide the mechanics, whereas they're very very obvious in more recent games. And that's something I'd love for 2K23 to get to that more organic feeling. Because for me, even with 2K21, 2K22, allegedly built from the ground up, I haven't felt that.
Yeah, so, I mean, of course that's going to be an canned animation, like you mentioned. I mean, it's a sequence that they put in the game that involves multiple players, right? It's the same thing as like contact dunks in a video game. Do you really want them to take out contact dunks
exactly
from these games?
Yeah.
I mean, some of those are the best highlights. But the way it feels good in NBA Live 06 is the fact that you still had to move the ball in that direction and, you know, it'd still have your dribble and whatnot, right? You had to still be pushing your player towards that, the middle of those two defenders in order to create the sequence. And because of the way the sequence plays out, because of how smooth that transition is, it feels completely natural. And you're like, hey, I did the right thing. That's really cool. And after you actually split the two defenders, there's no, like, your player doesn't just stop. You can just keep moving forward in a fluid motion and then throw it down like I did with Rose, or finish at the rim. Really cool. And I agree. I'd like to see a little bit more fun stuff like that in more realistic stuff like that in NBA 2K23. Stuff that feels natural, but is obviously going to be a canned sequence. But something that feels natural and progressive throughout the sequence, where you can come off of the sequence and finish, or it just has to feel good. You know what I mean? And yeah, great touch on NBA Live 06. Crazy the stuff that they were doing back then with those games. And I said this to you before, and I think you agreed with me. NBA Live 06, because of the gameplay, the way it feels on the sticks, how solid overall it is as a basketball title, as an overall basketball video game title, it's kind of like NBA 2K14 for the PC, you know, and then for, you know, other people who were on PS3 would be like the PS3 version of NBA 2K14. That gameplay is just rock solid. It makes sense. It has good foot planning. It makes sense. It's fun to dribble with the right stick. It's very reactive and realistic on the right stick for dribbling. Shooting feels good. Playing defense is fun. It just holds up. And I think that NBA Live 06 for me, for the live series, is basically like the 2K14 for the live series.
No, I can totally see that that parallel there. And I think there have been releases in both series that they've just been, as you say, very solid on the sticks. They've got the features, so not just the gameplay, but also the modes and the features that just allow them to hold up through the years. And they're that title that we stick with and mod for a few years after they've been replaced, or 2K14 going on a decade now. And of course, Live 06 PC was what we picked for the NBA Live PC project that we originally started when it looked like we wouldn't have a basketball game on PC anymore, when Live 09 was announced as a console-only release, and before 2K9 was announced as a PC release itself. We wanted to have that PC modding project to keep a game alive and to have a current roster for a popular game, and 06 was the one we chose because it was the most solid. 07 and 08 have more issues with substitution logic, with fatigue effects, some missing features here and there. So 06 is kind of, as I've said before, I feel that last great all-around release. Live 10 comes close, but it's not on PC, and there are some All-Star Weekend is missing, and there are some issues with Dynasty Mode. But it's, again, it's in second place, if not a strong contender against 06 PC. But as far as PC releases go, 06 is one of the strongest. And yeah, you just keep updating it through the years, and there was that support for it, people sticking with it, feeling that they could stick with it, either because they didn't have consoles, or they didn't want to go to 2K, or they just didn't like the newer games, whatever. A lot of people stuck with 06, as they've done for 2K14. So I definitely see the parallel there, no doubt.
You know, speaking of the classics, Sweet Jones OTF, who's, you know, been a participant in our top 10 plays of the week, a supporter of the show, so we really appreciate you for that, decided that I think he was motivated from our NBA 2K19 updates, me and Stildo's 94-95 season that we have on there, and then also in part probably for your NBA 2K14 My Career updates. He stated that, you know, reached out to me, and he was talking to me about wanting to start a season on NBA 2K22 on console, PS4 gen, using a retro season, because he loved hearing what was going on with my season with Ken, and sounded like a lot of fun. So, you know, I threw a bunch of seasons, ran a bunch of seasons by him that I really enjoyed from the past. It looks like from the highlight that he shared that he chose the 07-08 season. It looks like he found a workable 07-08 roster on 2K Share, which is a favorite of roster makers, the 07-08 season. People love that season. And I do too. I thought it was a great season, not just because the Celtics won the NBA championship.
But it helps.
right, it helps. But yeah, he chose the 07-08 season, and now he's in, I want to say he's in a my league, playing against the CPU and having a blast. He sent me a highlight of Shaq. I think he might be using the Suns for the season, which is a great choice because they had Shaq that season. They still had Amare Stoudemire and Steve Nash. Just a super fun team in real life, and it was a super fun. It's a super fun video game team. But he sent me a highlight of Shaq absolutely posterizing Andrew Bynum after an offensive rebound, and it looked very Shaq-like. So I'm glad that he's listening to the show, and I'm glad that he kind of got inspiration from the season that I have with Stildo and your My Career updates. And I love when the community gets involved with like that, and they get ideas as well.
No, absolutely. And to echo what you said, thank you so much for the support. We really do appreciate it. You know, you go back to those old seasons. I mean, there have been so many memorable seasons, of course, in the years that we've been watching, and go back before we were born and whatnot, and memorable moments there as well. But it's always interesting trying to pick a retro season like that. I mean, obviously, to some extent, especially on console, you're limited to what's available as far as what people have made. And of course, on PC, we talk about 2K13 and 2K14 with UBR and URB and whatnot. You've got many seasons at your disposal. But how do you choose a season? And you said the 2008 season, you had the Celtics three-party coming together. Obviously, you had the Lakers making that big trade and getting Pau Gasol for Kwame Brown, to name the two major parts of that deal. You had Shaq going to the Suns mid-season. So you're always looking at moves that were made during the season and the interesting teams of the time. You know, you're playing the 95 season, and you've got the Celtics, that memorable Celtics team that you've mentioned on multiple occasions. So it's little things like that, specific lineups that really stick out in your mind that were interesting and fun to play with above all, and scenarios that were presented by the real season that allow you to choose that season with mods. Or even go back to the game, of course, if you're going back to a game set in that season. That's a big factor in which games hold up, I think, when you can go back and play with that team. Oh, that's right. This is the game that had these rosters and this team that was very memorable. And this was such a memorable season replaying it. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. And I want to say to Sweet Jones OTF, because I know you're going to be listening to the show, the reason why I didn't use that Shaq highlight in the top 10 is because you didn't send it to me in a workable format. So you shared it to me in our private message, and I appreciate that. I loved seeing it. But if it's not a tweet, I can't download it using the Twitter downloader application. So you didn't direct tweet it from your account, and I didn't get it in an email. But if you have highlights like that, or you have explosive highlights from that season that you think that are top 10 worthy, definitely email them to me or post it on Twitter, and I can try to, grab it from Twitter. So, no, good stuff. I love the fact that guys like VF Baller, who also was a regular listener of our show, I reached out to him, see how he was doing. He said that he has a season going on NBA Live 06 PC. I want to say that he was using the Bulls, so that would make you happy. But he said that it was definitely a challenge. He said that it was the season that he was having was a challenge. I'm guessing he's probably playing on one of the higher difficulty levels and trying to bring that team on the up and up. But no, it's really cool to see that our listeners are also playing these games and either trying to do retro seasons with the newest 2K or just going back and playing the classics in general.
And I think when people go back to the old games, as we've been doing a lot over the past 12 months in particular, I think it's filling that gap in the market that's not there, because we only have 2K as the new game that's coming out every year, whereas we used to have so many games coming out. And Relhouse, shout out to Rel, mentioned it on the top 10 this week that he loved seeing all the different games that we feature, which is something that you love to do, and with every top 10 each week, to feature a variety of games, which is what makes the top 10 so entertaining. I think we'd all agree on that. Going back to those games fills the gap in the market of not having Alive and 2K and maybe a third game as well, and of course a new Jam or a fairly recent Jam or Street game. Having those different options, we have to go back many years to have that variety. And I think it is filling a gap there.
I mean, for a lot of people, they feel like there's only one NBA game out there. But for me, when I wake up every morning, I have like 40 plus basketball video games.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, that's the way I look at it. So for me, it's endless variety, endless choices, sometimes too many choices. Like, I feel like I neglect games. It's like, man, I haven't put on NBA 2K10 in a long time. Not because I don't like 2K10, not because I don't like the mods that I have installed, just because I've been into five other games. You know what I mean? So if anything, I have almost too many options.
I have that problem myself, as you may imagine.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, I've seen your collection scattered all over the floor. It's unbelievable. You're still probably picking that up and putting it away now.
Close like to,
months
yeah.
later. Yeah. But no, I said this to at B-Ball Video Games, because he sent me that that clutch steal and 720 reverse dunk with George Mirason from NBA Live 98. I said to him, I said, my top 10 is the only top 10 in basketball video game history, the only countdown ever created in video game history that would fully feature, love, and allow a George Mirason 720 reverse jam going coast to coast off the dribble. Because a lot of people would frown at that. They'd be like, oh, well, that's unrealistic, or, oh, he would never do that, and, or, why are you displaying that, or whatever. But I love it, and I think that it's part of retro video game lore. I think that moments like that are exciting, fun, and funny all at the same time. And he agreed. He was like, that's why I love your top 10. He's like, you'll display stuff like this and you appreciate it. And yeah, that's why I love doing the top 10 every week, because of the variety of highlights that we get. And it really is a true celebration of basketball gaming.
I mean, is it any more unrealistic than me being in the NBA doing 360 dunks in my career? I would suggest not.
You jumping from one side of the hoop, grabbing the rim, and then throwing it down on the other side? Something you could never do in real life, right? Yeah, oh my God. I mean, well, I don't know you that well. Maybe you could do that in real life.
I'll cop that. No, I can't. No.
Bro, Kennedy. There you go.
Actually, speaking of B-Ball Video Games, did you see his glitched out... I forget which game he was playing, but it glitched out and had Andrew Lang filling the roster, similar to my Christian Leitner glitch?
Oh, yeah, I saw him mention that. He actually mentioned your video specifically that you uploaded for the multiple Christian Leitners, the entire team full of Christian Leitners. How would that team do? I think they'd be lacking. I mean, he could handle the ball for his size, but they wouldn't have somebody to truly bring it up. I can picture two Christian Leitners always being in the backcourt, trying to lobbing it to each other, taking a couple dribbles, lobbing it to him again, just trying to get the ball up the floor.
Just like 1930s basketball, just passing right. up the court, you know, almost like right. almost netball. I mean, I think right. a team full of Christian Leitners would do better than a team full of Andrew Langs. Funnily enough, they were traded for each other in the 96 season, so it felt kind of appropriate that glitch matched up with my Leitner glitch, but... yeah, what a weird turn of events in both cases.
I think once they got into the half court, the team full of Christian Leitners would do pretty well. Because Christian Leitner was a very good passer. He could extend the floor. Knockdown mid-range shooter, actually good in the post. People forget that Christian Leitner, while he didn't live up to, you know, superstar expectations, he was still a damn good player and an all-star caliber player for a while. But and having 12 all-star caliber all-around players like Christian Leitner wouldn't be the worst, but like I said, I think the overall ball handling aspect would bite that team. But no, really funny that some of the glitches that happen in those games. My brothers and I were talking about it, and we can't remember which, if it was an NBA Live game or an NBA 2K game, and this wasn't a glitch or a bug, it was just a bad design decision, but in the game, the text on the rosters, the O's, the A's would look like O's. So instead of LeBron James, it would look like LeBron Jones. and it just made the names look wacky throughout the roster. So we still say that sometimes with certain players that had that, like, we say the way their names looked in that game when we find those players in the newer games. But, you know, because we think it's funny, I just can't remember the game that had that weird text. I'll have to get back to you on that.
And these are the things that stick in our mind as well, these fun moments with basketball games. I have been playing my 2K14 in my career. I don't have much of an update except to say that I've started the fourth season playing without Melo. Hansen is playing well. I'm just averaging just under a quadruple-double, so that's crazy to start the year. That's not going to last. The triple-double might, the quadruple-double won't. But I did want to share, and I shared this on Twitter as well, the generated rookie, Russian rookie actually, who has a Clippers tattoo and was drafted by your Celtics with the 8th overall pick. And that's kind of an unfortunate tattoo to have when you've not been drafted by that team. And the funny thing is that the Clippers had the 9th pick. So he almost went to his favorite team, but the Celtics stepped in and snapped him up with the 8th pick. And so now he's playing on the Celtics with a Clippers tattoo. Kind of awkward, but I saw that, had to take a screenshot. So funny. I just love generated rookies because you get all kinds of crazy stuff like that. You get Dick King. Dick King made his debut shooting 1 of 9. What wasn't a great debut for Dick King. But some funny moments with generated rookies. They tell stories. They become virtual hardwood legends. I would never discourage people from using real draft classes and custom draft classes of their own creation. But sometimes just letting the CPU generate a draft class and come up with these weird names and weird situations and a rookie with an NBA team tattoo, logo tattoo, and they go somewhere else that's not that team. It's funny. I love that.
Dick King, obviously, dicking around too much.
Yeah,
in that
he was, yeah.
Performance. That tattoo thing is hilarious. It reminds me of Dennis Schroeder. Not the exact same scenario, but it is funny. Dennis Schroeder joining the Celtics, not even finishing the season with them, but before the season started, getting a huge Boston Celtics tattoo. I think that is absolutely stupid to do if you're a player, if you can't guarantee you're going to be with that team and, you know, for the long haul. And he wasn't even with them for a season. But, you know, obviously he got traded halfway through the season, so he's not with the Celtics anymore, but he's stuck with this gigantic Boston Celtics tattoo. And then Jason Terry, if you remember correctly, when he signed on with the Celtics and he thought we were going to win a championship, and we probably should have. We had a great roster that year. But he got a Celtics championship tattoo. So not only did the Celtics not win the championship, but Jason Terry was out the door soon after. So now he was stuck with this Celtics championship tattoo. And it's just weird.
See, it worked for him in 2011 because he got the original Larry O'Brien trophy and then the Mavericks won. So it paid off that time. So he thought, he must have thought, this is a good omen. Not so much the second time around.
Well, it reminds me, he should have done the Shaq approach. Like, do you remember when Shaq came to the Suns? And boy, Shaq on the Suns, that's twice we bring this up on the same podcast. That's wild. Where he...
The big Shaqness.
Yeah, he pointed to his ring finger, saying, like, I'm going to get them a ring. See, yep. At least that's not stuck on his body.
Yeah.
Right? That's something. And obviously they can do tattoo cover-ups, but that doesn't always go well. And that's also, not that they don't have money, but that's also, like, another cost for the player. But, yeah, Shaq pointing to his finger trying to guarantee a championship is something that's, you know, on video. Like, we know he did it. But it's not something that's stuck on his body for the rest of his life if he doesn't remove it.
So we've mentioned 2K23, NBA 2K23, a couple of times on the show, and we're getting to that stage of the year when we start to hear something. There's usually some kind of announcement around about the NBA Finals, pre-order bonuses, a release date, whatnot, or a bit of an early hype video sometimes. Although in recent years, the previous season has been pushed back as well, and has certainly not been as exciting, which again comes down to that lack of competition or alternatives, as we've said before, which is unfortunate. You know, it used to be a lot of fun to cover and experience the previous season. It hasn't had that same excitement in recent years. You could say maybe we're getting old and jaded, but I say the excitement hasn't been the same, especially when it's so compressed into pretty much just August so often. But we're getting
old and jaded.
I mean, that is so it's a bit of both. A little from column A, a little from column B, to quote Grandpa Simpson, absolutely, as we yell at clouds. But yeah. Presumably, we'll start hearing some concrete information, or at least the announcement of the game. I mean, there's no question that it's coming out. It's not like NBA Live, unfortunately, where we haven't heard anything, and until we hear the confirmation, we're unsure. We know there will be an NBA 2K23, just that initial announcement and maybe a teaser here and there. It used to be around about the NBA Finals. Maybe it'll be around about the draft this year. Remains to be seen. Knowing our luck, there'll be something announced after this podcast comes out. You know, that's happened before here on the NLC podcast, where we say, oh, there's been no news, and then news drops as soon as the show comes out. So hey, if we've prompted the news, you're welcome. But yeah, 2K23, obviously a lot to know about that game, including the future of the PC version as well. But you did notice something and brought it to my attention, Derek. Madden 23 for the PC is going to be a last-gen port again. And while it is a different game, a different developer, a different publisher, you look at something like that and you look at what happened with 2K22 not being that next-gen port as 2K15 was several years ago, it doesn't necessarily bode well for the PC version of 2K23. It certainly raises concerns that it's going to be a last-gen release once again.
Yeah, when I saw that, I messaged you and I was like, yeah, we definitely should talk about this because it does worry me. I think that there's a little bit of fatigue behind having, you know, on NBA 2K22 PC because, again, it was once again a last-gen port. I think there's a lot of anticipation and excitement in the PC modding community and PC gaming community to get that next-gen port over so they can start modding it, so they can experience that game on PC, etc. And it seems like what they're, I don't know if it's technology limitations that they're worried about, accessibility limitations. I don't know if they're worried about people with good or above average PCs, you know, the average PC gamer, not somebody that, you know, spends $2,000 on a PC or $1,500 on a PC. I wonder if they're worried about those people not buying, you know, not being able to handle a next gen version with that hardware. I don't know if, you know, part of that is maybe factoring into the laptop crowd. As you know, gaming laptops can be ultra expensive and they also overheat often. They're a lot easier to overheat than desktop PCs. So part of me wonders, big picture wise, if they're like, all right, well, if we move over, you know, so many people are on laptops now, they're not on big bulky desktops. People want to be mobile and they want to be able to take their games with them and all of that stuff. You know, are people's average or above average or even good laptops going to be able to handle this game? Because as you know, what they're going to have to do is change the recommended specifications for, you know, system requirements for the game. They're going to have to update that if they move the next gen version over. So I think that big picture wise, there's a lot of different things they're probably talking about and thinking about. I don't think necessarily that this decision has to revolve around 2K, you know, shutting out the PC gamer or being nasty to them or being like, or not caring about them, because you hear those comments in the community, right? It could be related to them saying, you know what, we're not going to be able to get enough people to play the PC version of this game if we update it, and not enough people are going to be on the sticks playing this game.
See, I think those factors that you brought up are far more likely than, as you said, a lot of people in the community feel that it's an intentional slight against the PC 2K community. And the other thing that you'll see is the conspiracy theories of, oh, they've got a deal in place with Microsoft and Sony to push the new consoles. And look, I'm not saying that developers and publishers are always doing things that are above board and they're not making deals like that and trying to push people in a certain way, or that they're not making decisions with the consumer in mind, that it's about what benefits them. Absolutely. Microtransactions, as we've mentioned many times, are the obvious example here. But here's the thing. When you look at how much of the community is on console, the user base, I should say, is on console for 2K as opposed to PC, they don't need to be pushing anybody towards console. They've already got about 99% of the user base. If you look at the numbers, I would say 99% really on consoles. The PC market, the PC user base, I should say, of 2K is incredibly small. Now, we want it on PC. We're not saying that PC sucks or anything like that. We obviously support the PC version. This is why we want that next-gen port. But realistically, they don't need any kind of conspiracy to push people from PC to console. They've already got majority of people there on console. If they wanted to push people towards PS5 and Xbox Series X, we wouldn't be messing with the PC. They'd stop releasing for PS4 and Xbox One. That's what would get people to the new consoles. But they're not doing that. I do think it comes down to, as you said, the specifications. I think it's the getting the manpower and the time, putting the resources into making that port and putting the effort into getting that next-gen port for PC, if it is a smaller user base, not prioritizing it, which is unfortunate for that user base, but is also, you can see where they're coming from, unfortunately. So it has much more to do with the power, as you said, and a lot of people playing on laptops these days and not necessarily having the specs to do that, changing specs in general, that smaller user base. It's probably just easier to continue to port the PS4 X1 version to PC as they've been doing for years now. So I think it's much more to do with that than any kind of sinister motivation.
Right, I can promise you that if they went to next gen for NBA 2K23 on PC, that it would not move the needle in any way in favor of PC over console.
Exactly.
I would put all my money on the line to state that, just because it's still, console is going to be by far the dominant platform. There's so many people out there that just don't know enough about PC gaming. This is true, by the way. They don't know like the ins and outs of PC gaming, what the PCs can handle, etc. And then there's also a huge part of the population that doesn't want the hassle of playing on PC, right? They think there's too many moving parts. They're worried about performance. They want to just be able to put their game on and grab a controller, the game to work the same every single time, not to have to worry about like PC crashing, stuff like that, and just play their game. So like, there's no way that moving to next gen to PC is going to move the needle in any way in favor of the PC. Now, that's not to say that there isn't possible agreements in the background, like you had mentioned. So, I mean, we're not saying that that's not possible, where they're like, you know, they have a contract with, you know, Xbox and Sony, and there's discussions behind the scenes that say, hey, listen, we want to push people to these, to the newest version. And I'm sure those conversations must happen. I'm not saying that, but I think that the primary reason might have to do with accessibility from people on PC, people being able to actually handle the game, and what type of audience they want, like the volume of an audience that they could reach, right? And they're obviously going to be able to reach a bigger audience if more computers can handle it. So that's the way I look at it. I do want to point out, though, and this is for the people in the community who bring up this aspect of it. I think Sticky Fingers has brought it up before. Several other people in the community have brought it up before. It's not even that it's super frustrating that we don't get the next gen version on PC. It's the fact that they're not updating the PC version gameplay wise, it feels like. Right? So like, sure, it's going to be a last gen port, but they're not getting kind of like a clunky gameplay experience. They're not being innovative. I mean, they added the secondary commentary crew, but that's a presentation element in NBA 2K22 PC. Nice touch to add it, but that's a presentation element. But they're not doing anything as far as like upgrading the graphical or gameplay experience really for the PC version. And I think that gets people more than it not being next gen. Right? They want to see an improvement. They want to see something that they can sink their teeth into, something new and exciting, and they don't feel like they're getting that. So I think that's what people are kind of worried about this time around, that we're going to get NBA 2K23 for the PC. It's going to be a last-gen port, and it's going to play almost identical to NBA 2K22.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you can debate whether the next-gen version is the jump that we wanted. I mean, I don't feel that it really has been that improvement built from the ground up as it's been allegedly been. But I mean, the PS4 and Xbox One are going to be in the same boat as well. That version of the game is no longer the priority, which is what always happens when it becomes the last gen version or current gen, or and what they call it, new gen or next gen. What a few years into the new generation, always the terms get muddy like that. But the PS4 X1 port, It's not going to be the priority, unfortunately. But we went through the same thing with NBA Live. When NBA Live stopped coming out on PC altogether, people felt that it was a move to spite PC gamers or to push them towards consoles. Again, most of the user base was already on the console anyway, so there's no point in doing that. And we're not saying that we shouldn't be upset about this or disappointed, and greatly disappointed. I just don't think that there's some grand conspiracy or anything particularly sinister more than they've made a decision based on the size of the user base, the effort and the money they need to do to put into developing that next-gen port for PC, and the ease of continuing to port from the PS4 X1 version. Unfortunately, that does bring us to what you said, where you don't have those gameplay enhancements, those extra modes. You're still stuck with My League instead of the all-encompassing My NBA, things like that. A lot, and any other improvements, genuine improvements that you would like to see in the last-gen version that just don't make it there because it would take a massive code rewrite to get... You know, it's not just a case of copy the MyNBA code and paste it over the MyLeague MyGM code. It doesn't... Programming doesn't work that way. And some people don't understand that, I feel. But if you put in the time and the effort, if they wanted to bring it to last gen, I'm sure they could. But do they want to put the time and effort and into doing that? Probably not, with more people getting the new consoles. And certainly with PC, it's just not a priority. But it is a shame. I suppose at least as long as we get one, we can at least have a modding community going. And if they do make some token improvements to the PS4 X1 version, there may be some improvements. But it is very hard to get excited when you know it's all going to be for the current gen consoles, the new gen consoles, rather than that prior gen port.
For me, it kind of stinks because you know how I feel about NBA 2K22 PC.
Yeah.
I absolutely can't stand playing it overall. I just think the gameplay... The skating, the warp dribbling, the constant suction, the constant missed layups, the awkward movement, all of it just blah, it bums me out like you wouldn't believe. So the way I look at it is NBA 2K23 is going to come out for the PC. It's going to be a last-gen port. It's going to be very similar to that gameplay that I don't like on NBA 2K22, and then I'm just going to put it down for a year like I did this time. Luckily, I have... an unbelievable collection of basketball games at my disposal that I can go back and enjoy, and I'll still have a fun year of gaming. But it is disappointing to see it's disappointing when you don't enjoy the newest title and you don't feel like gameplay is as sharp as it should be. And that's the case, that's the way it was with NBA 2K22.
And not everyone is like us. Well, we can go back and we can play. You and I can go back and play Live 95. We can go back and play Lakers versus Celtics and have a blast with it. Not everybody can, especially if you are that online team play gamer or playground, whether it's 2K Pro-Am or the Rec or Playground, whatever. If you want to jump on and play that, you need to be on the latest game. I mean, we can simulate a lot of online head-to-head with Parsec, obviously, but for that experience that people want in the playground, in the city, in the neighborhood, and 2K Pro-Am and whatnot, that is something they want to do on the latest game. You need to do on the latest game. And some of them just... Some people can't get back to older games. That they don't like those older mechanics, and that's understandable. You know, just as we can... We do enjoy them. Not everybody can go back. And they do want to play the latest game with the latest rosters and with the new mechanics and with that online scene. So you do want that latest game to be as good as it possibly can be. I would like to play a new game and start a MyNBA or a MyLeague with new rosters. I was absolutely open to doing that with 2K22. Unfortunately, both versions of the game disappointed me this year. So fortunately, I was able to get it back to 2K14. But it is kind of a shame that 2K22 was such a bust. For me, obviously there are people enjoying it, and I'm not saying you're wrong too. You know, there are obviously strong points to it, and if you have been enjoying the recent games more than I have, then probably more open to it. I've just kind of been burned out on them, and there are parts of it that I just can't get past. So, yeah, fortunately I've been able to go back to 2K14, obviously, but I would like to be able to play 2K23 and enjoy it.
Yeah, and I want to go back to... What a few people in the community have said. I've seen them talk about it on the Discord, seen them talk about it on Twitter. It's not looking good for gameplay to change directions into something a little bit more enjoyable, a little bit less canned, you know, fixed foot planning, all that stuff. Especially when we see the way that Dazar talks on Twitter, right? Constantly promoting the way the game is played right now, you know, shouting people out for... You know, the gameplay videos that they display, and he'll be like, nice, or something like that. But then you actually watch the gameplay video, and it's defenders acting completely unrealistic and just moving out of the way of the offensive player. And, like, it just looks messy. But he's promoting that, and he's talking about how it's, you know, the most realistic gameplay or something along those lines, and, you know, that they've had maybe in 2K's history. So that doesn't bode well for us in, you know, getting a more fun, more realistic, more enjoyable basketball title when NBA 2K23 releases or even beyond that.
I mean, the direction is pretty clear, and the focus is quite obvious, and they are trying to have that mass appeal. And again, as I've said before, I hate saying that because it makes me sound snobby. Like, oh, it should only be for the hardcore sim heads, and all you casuals should not be playing our game.
Hold on a second. I'll just point something out. That's not...
It's not what I'm trying to say, but yeah.
Because you're not saying sim heads are hardcore. Because, listen, I've played... How many video games have we played together? Basketball games, a lot of them.
Dozens.
And you absolutely have a blast when we go back and play NBA Live 95, okay? You have fun because those mechanics are fun for you. You know, we have fun going back and playing games like NBA Live 2001, which is absolutely not sim in any way, right? And we're playing exhibition matches. It's not like, oh, sim head hardcore,
sure,
you know, in a my league or blah 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 or season or something like that. So no, it's not that. We're talking about, is it an enjoyable experience on the sticks overall? Do you have the control that you should have? Are the players moving in a way that makes sense on the floor and that is enjoyable on the floor? So like, it's definitely not like hardcore sim head. It's like, is this game fun? Is it reactive? Does it play the way that it should be?
Oh, absolutely. I do think there is an element of focusing, trying to cast that wider net and go for that crowd that is into the cosmetic items and maybe not necessarily hardcore NBA fans and don't necessarily want that sim style. You know, they barely touch the NBA side of things. They just want to play the playground, which is fine. In fact, I think a big problem about that aspect of the game is forcing people who just want to play the playground or 2K Pro-Am, the rec, forcing them to play the NBA side of things to get a player good enough to be able to go into those other modes. They should be able to avoid the NBA just as we should be able to avoid playground, Pro-Am, etc. if we don't want to get into that. So, but as they try to cast that wider net, as 2K has become popular, selling 10 million copies, being such a juggernaut, and becoming having those aspects that are less about the NBA and more about... I mean, they're kind of basketball adjacent in some cases. And then, of course, you've got your Crocs to reference that again. But you see that on the 2K Twitter. Who's wearing Crocs? Not me. But because you have that focus on those other elements and you are casting that wider net and trying to get people who are interested in basketball, not necessarily hardcore into it, they don't care that the game doesn't have those strategic bones or that NBA strategy or whatnot, then the game is going to go in a direction that is going to be less appealing to somebody like to people like you and I, for example. And I don't say that to be, oh, it must only be sim heads or it must only be the hardcore basketball gamers or whatnot. I'm all for people getting into basketball gaming, and we all have to start somewhere. I certainly was not a hardcore sim head when I started playing, and I will still take liberties now, even if I do like that simulation style. But as you do try and get that, when you start trying to compete with Fortnite and things outside of the genre, when it was competing with NBA Live and starting to really kick NBA Live's ass, it was going in that very sim direction and becoming that sim game that NBA Live failed to be. Now that they're competing with other genres, it's expanding beyond basketball gaming in a way. And I think that has affected the experience for people like you and I.
Right. But again, I'll say this, and it's not even saying hardcore. If you picked up those sticks, and even if it wasn't a super sim feeling title, NBA 2K22, but the gameplay was fun for you, and you felt like the foot planning was better, and you felt like you weren't being dragged into canned animations constantly, and you didn't feel like the defense was just moving out of the way, and something wasn't just so off with the action, you would have continued that Bulls season. That's the point. Is it's not about being, you know, it's not just like hardcore sim, or it's just like, you know, we want to run more plays or all of this stuff. Like, it's not stuff like that. It's, is the game fun? Do you have control? Stuff like that. You would have continued that season. So I think that the gameplay is off for a lot of people. And you see that in the comments, and you see that in the reviews, the actual user reviews, not like paid for reviews and, you know, suck up reviews. But, you know, you see the discourse about the gameplay and the builds and the artificial boosts and all of that stuff. And that's from people who, you know, would be considered quote unquote more casual, etc. And there's a lot of people complaining about that. So I just think the game is not moving in a great direction overall, gameplay wise.
Well, no, that's true. I mean, the sluggishness, I just couldn't get past. And the way the players moved, it just didn't feel good for me on the sticks. Shooting mechanics still didn't feel right compared to even a couple of years ago, let alone 2K17, which is probably one of my favorite shooting mechanics in the series history.
Might be today. The best. Might be the best. 2K17 might have the best shooting mechanics, yeah.
Absolutely. So, but even 2K19, 20, I was able to play and enjoy playing my career heavily in those two games and even online for some of them. But it just hasn't felt that way in 2K21 and 2K22, that the feel, and again, the prior gen version, PC version, whatever, PS4, X1 port, has issues of its own and have not felt great either. So, and I don't like being that down on the latest games. I don't want to be that person. Oh, the series peaked here and it can never get better and everything else is trash after this. I don't look at it that way, but I've just not felt compelled to play 2K1 and 2K22. I would love for 2K23 to move in a better direction and to, as much as I would love to I'll keep playing 2K14 in my career. You know that. I'll play it right through the 2022 season or 2023 season as it'll be. I'd love to do that. That'd be a really cool thing. I'd really enjoy that, to do that. But I would like to at least have the option of playing the latest game, make it feel like a feasible option for me to play rather than the last couple of years where it's been great going back to Live 10 and 06 and 2K14 and playing other games with you, of course, and revisiting old favorites and giving other games a second look. But I'd like to play the newest one. I'd like it to be good. And even if I'm not playing it, I'd like it to be as good as it possibly can be for everybody else. And I don't think we've really got that on this generation so far.
No, the only positive is if they come out with NBA 2K23 for the PC and it's a PS4 port, is that the PC modding community will be able to jump right in again.
Yeah.
A lot of the tools will still work. A lot of the art will work. All of the art could possibly work depending on if they didn't make any adjustments to the graphics, the score bug, stuff like that. So that would allow the modding community to be up and running. Now, a perfect scenario with us, if we didn't get a next gen version, would be if they did make it kind of a port as far as like having all the assets work from, you know, last year, and it like graphically it's the same and everything, but in a twist of luck, we get also updated gameplay where the gameplay doesn't feel as sluggish. There's less canned animations. There's more realistic physics under the hoop. You're not skating all over the floor, stuff like that. That would be amazing. And I would jump all over NBA 2K23 PC if they made those improvements, and I'd even start modding it. But unfortunately, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think that it's going to be a 2K22-like game, if not almost identical.
That's my suspicion as well. And look, it isn't confirmed that it's a last-gen port at this point, but looking what's happening with Madden, looking what happened last year compared to what happened with 2K15 immediately going to a PS4 X1 port after 2K14 came out. I mean, 2K14, much as 2K21, came out as a launch title for a new console that came out in November, whereas the last-gen versions and the PC port came out in, September, October, thereabouts. So it was always going to be that first year of the new console launch, the existing consoles were not going to get those benefits, and the PC wasn't going to get the latest port from the forthcoming console. If it was, it was going to have to come out later anyway. But that second year we did get 2K15 was that port, and that didn't happen this time. And we do see Madden continue to be, and again, different company, different whatever, but it's the trend, and you've got to pay attention to these trends.
No, 100%. I guarantee EA Sports was the same thought process with Madden, where they were like, you know, what type of audience are we going to get in this net if we move that enhanced next-gen version over to PC? You know, are we going to lose a bunch of our, you know, PC gaming crowd due to the fact that their CPUs can't handle it? So I'm sure those are conversations they're always having behind the scenes and everything. I'll just say again, you know, to close this as well, is we're just lucky. You know, we're lucky that we have so many NBA titles and so many basketball titles in general that we go back and play and enjoy. And Parsec has opened up an entire world of opportunity for both of us and the community in order to play all of these older games and these mods together or against each other, etc., run tournaments and everything. I'd just say that, you know, we're lucky. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely. And I think retro basketball gaming is starting to fill that gap that we have because of the lack of alternatives and competition. I mean, to that point, we still don't know what's going to happen with NBA Live. There's always that speculation and rumblings. I'm not believing a new Live comes out until I hear it at this point.
Yeah, I'm just disappointed. I was convinced that they would try to come back end of last year or possibly this year, especially when they brought on Scott O'Gallagher and whatnot. And that was the rumblings, as a lot of people were like, you know, why bring on a basketball guy? His whole life is revolved around basketball. Why bring him on if you're not going to be working on a basketball game, right?
Rob Jones, so, too. You've got two prominent people from the 2K team. You bring them on, and there's no basketball game. It's
Now, how do we know that they're not working on something? We don't. True. We don't know what's going on. It's still very possible. We haven't heard any announcements. But at this point, it's not looking well, looking good. But I will say this. I haven't lost hope. I still think that the NBA Live series is alive. They haven't killed it yet. So I'm still optimistic we're going to get a release at some point.
And people say, why bring it back? And well, who else is realistically going to throw their hat into the ring?
I mean, I wonder if that merger happens or if EA does get, you know, if they sell or something like that. It makes you wonder if there's going to be a mind on that other end of the acquisition that says, listen, we need to be a competitor in this space. There's no reason for us not to be in this space. So let's make a game. You know what I mean? Like, you never know what could happen when new minds come onto the scene and new decision makers come onto the scene.
More money, too. More money.
And new money comes onto the scene, et cetera. So who knows what's going to happen with all that. But I'm just glad I have a lot of things I can play.
Having said that, though, I do have cynicism about the previous season, but I will keep an open mind. I'm always hoping for good news, and we will cover that as that news comes in.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting to talk about. It definitely gives us material for the podcast and whatnot. But as you know, the preview season in this case is going to revolve around, you know, for the first couple of months, it's always going to be, you know, the updates to like the city, like those like show environments and stuff like that. You won't get to see any gameplay. They'll interview NBA players. They'll start sending out ratings of players. Players will comment on it. Oh, my rating's too low. Or, oh, you guys, blah, 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 this and that. And then we'll get gameplay like a week or two before release. So like, we're not going to be able to talk about gameplay until right before release. So that's kind of disappointing. But preview season's exciting in its own ways for various reasons.
So we will be covering that later this year whenever that officially tips off. But for the moment, that has brought us to the end of episode 429 of the NLC podcast. We thank you for joining us to hear us talk about basketball video games. The NLC podcast comes out every week on the NLSC, which is nba-live.com, of course. You can also listen to us on the go on all the major podcatching apps and platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, just to name a few. On those platforms, we'd certainly appreciate a positive review if you could take the time to leave us one. And of course, you can also tune in on our YouTube channel. And in addition to checking out all the content we do for basketball video games, you can also connect with us on social media. So as always, Derek, I'll throw it over to you to promote your socials.
Oh, absolutely. You can reach me on Twitter at D4384 or at D43G. I'm also on YouTube, D43, and on the NLSC as a team member over there, D43.
As for me, I'm Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on Twitter. The NLSC is on Twitter and Facebook at the NLSC. Our Instagram is NLSC Basketball. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/NBA Live Series Center. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, NBA-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that's all for this week. So thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.